shofar. So as a machlokas rishonim, the Rosh and Beis Tam, what bracha do you make on shofar? Should the bracha have the verb shmir or the verb hiya? And the Rosh explains that this is apparently a machlokas as to what the mitzvah is. Is the mitzvah tkiya or shmir? So the question is, if the mitzvah is shmir, which is the view the Rosh favors and the Rambam and others, so why is it that we care who does the tkiya? Why do we have a requirement that it has to be a bar chiyuva? So we explored six major explanations of why it is that it matters who it is who's blowing the shofar. So one view is, if you said like Rebbein Tam, then the tkiya is the mitzvah. So that's why it matters. So that counts as one explanation. But if you say that it's not tkiya specifically, so then what do? So the second explanation we mentioned was the Shagasari and others, that even though the mitzvah is shmiya, but it has to be a kol shel chiyuv, it has to be a sound of obligation. And we talked about how that could explain the Torah's surprising statement that a chatzi aver, chatzi b'chorin cannot blow shofar not only on behalf of the tzibur, but even on behalf of himself. And by Megillah, he doesn't say it like that. So the explanation would be that the half of him that's chayiv has to hear a kol shel chiyuv, and because half of him is not chayiv, he can't generate a kol shel chiyuv. We mentioned the explanation, like Rabbi Gnack writes in the Sefer, that the reason we focus on shmiya is because the whole idea of the Rambam has that the shofar is a wake-up call, so it's got to come from outside. It's got to be something that you hear, even if you're the one blowing the shofar, you fulfill it through hearing. So far, so good. So that gets us to the third explanation. The Rosh here also has a proof that it's about hearing, because the Mishnah says that if somebody blows a shofar in a pit, so then the question of whether he is Yotze, his own shofar blowing, depends on whether he hears the sound of the shofar or the sound of the echo. This Mishnah is one of the major sources for the contemporary discussion about microphones, whether microphones are a valid way to fulfill such mitzvahs. So it seems like from that Mishnah that even the person blowing the shofar himself is only going to be Yotze if he hears his own call. So apparently that's the mitzvah. So we mentioned Rav Soloveitchik, as quoted by Rav Schechter in Eretz HaTzvi, who understands that really maybe there's two halves of the mitzvah. There's a Maisa HaMitzvah, and there's a Kiyum HaMitzvah. And blowing shofar is the Maisa Mitzvah, hearing the shofar is the Kiyum HaMitzvah, and the machlokas about the bracha is not about what is the mitzvah. The machlokas is, do you make the bracha on the Kiyum, or do you make the bracha on the Maisa? And this question impacts the issue of whether the shofar is a chefter shel mitzvah or not. If it's about tkiya, then the shofar would be a chefter shel mitzvah. If it's about shmiya, then it's a sound. And we mentioned some ramifications, whether there's an inyan to touch the shofar or not, whether the shofar becomes also b'hana, and the question of mitzvah haba bi'avera, that the Rambam says there's no mitzvah haba bi'avera by a shofar because the mitzvah is in the sound, the angel called din gezel, and other rishonim disagree. So that would be affected by that as well. So that's three explanations. And then we mentioned also the Abinezer has a similar explanation, but a little bit differently, that every mitzvah needs some action in order for it to be a mitzvah. It can't be totally passive. That's why you say for Torah, you can't just inherit it. You have to either write it or purchase it, but you can't just inherit it. And so too, in the mitzvah of shofar, it's really about shmiya, but it can't be that you can just passively sit in shul and the yotze. It must be that there has to be a maisa involved, so therefore the tekiya is the maisa. And he explains that way why the shofar is covered during the bracha, because it says it's like v'chala during kiddush. Then you could have made the bracha on the tekiya, but you want to instead make it on the shmiya. So therefore, we don't want the shofar to be embarrassed, so we cover it up, just like we cover up v'chalas when we pass over that for kiddush. And the Minchas Elazar disagreed and said that if he was right, you'd cover up the shofar blower, not the shofar itself, and the covering of the shofar is because of Kabbalistic reasons, and you don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Abinezer. Okay, so then they talked about the fifth possibility, that it's simply both, it's 50-50, it's the engineer, and the sixth possibility based on the Nitziv, that the idea is, this is Chish, we mentioned the other day, of Hechsher Mitzvah, Haksuva Makra, that if you have an act that's really a preparation for another mitzvah, but it is written in Chumash, that gives it a quasi-mitzvah status, and it says that in the context of Sukkah. So maybe we could say by Shofar also that it's not the mitzvah, it's the Hefshah mitzvah, but it's more than that because it is Ksuv Makra, so therefore it has this elevated status. Those are basically the six approaches. All right, I think that was a pretty good speed round. Any questions about any of that? Any issues? Okay, moving on. So we talked also about the concept of mechila, but we know the Yom Kippur is not mechaper unless you obtain mechila from people you have hurt. It's not focus, which that means it's not mechaper. Does it mean that just the avero is not mechavero? You don't get released until the victim releases you. Does it mean that God says his chelek and mitzvot are all mechavero also? He's not going to be mechal unless the human being is mechal. Or maybe it's more than that. Yom Kippur as a whole is not going to take effect unless the human being is willing to grant you mechila. And we talked about why that should be, and also the question of why is it that we seem to have this focus, they have to ask the mechila, not just get it. Because the question comes up, what if the person says tefillah zaka, or if the person is mochel you without a request? So it sounds like a lot of the poskim understood that that's not good enough, you have to actually ask. And it's also the question of why is it that we associate Dafka with Yom Kippur? So we mentioned that basically there are three approaches to why we ask for mechila. One approach is because the person has a taina on you and you need to get them to release the claims, but we see that that's not enough of an explanation, because then why should you have to ask if they already did release the claims? So apparently there's a focus on process also, that you have to ask, and that maybe really the mitzvah is the asking, and when you see they give you a mechila, that is the remez, that is the indication that you've done it properly. So why should that be? So it could be because for mechila is a humbling process, it's part of the whole tshuva process. The Gemara says in Brachos, they're called osa davar aveiru mispayesh, whoever is embarrassed because of the sin, he gets mechila for everything. So it seems like it's an integral part of the tshuva process. So we discussed there how that would explain why you need to ask, why if you ask three times and you don't get a positive response, but you go through the procedure properly, it's not your problem anymore. And we discussed also why there might be an idea of gathering a minyan and announcing in front of them that you are seeking to do tshuva. And also the discussion in Poskim about whether you can use a letter or a shliach for mechila and how they generally find it to be less than ideal because there isn't really a face-to-face interaction. And then, and that's necessary for this whole process of submission. And then we mentioned the third goal of mechila, that maybe mechila is really there in order to smooth over the relationships, that if you've offended the other party, so then you need to fix the kesher, and that could be why we have two different mishnayos to talk about mechila. The mishnah in Bava Kamma that says that if you hurt someone, you have to pay, but you also have to do a vakesh mechila, you have to ask them to release their claims, basically. But in Yuma, it says, ad shiirat says havero, that Yom Kippur is not machaper until you appease the other person. And that also fits with a statement of the Pirkei de Blazer that in Shemayim, when they're arguing our case in Yom Kippur, so one of the arguments is that God should have mercy on us because we're angelic, and just like the angels don't fight, so too we don't fight. And that's also a major theme here, and that's why we need to fix the relationships. The Chassam Sofer said that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there was less of a need for Mechila because there were karbanos that brought us together, etc., etc. And we talk about that. Therefore, that's why it's connected to Yom Kippur, and that's why also it might make sense to wait until Yom Kippur, because maybe there's a need for time to heal. And then we talked also how this could explain there is a bilateral role for Mechila, that the victim also should take an active role in giving Mechila, because that's also about fixing the relationships, and there's an idea that the victim should not be an achsar and refuse to forgive. And in some texts it says it's a chote. We talked about what happens if a parent says you're not allowed to be mochel, what happens if you take a shavua that you're not going to be mochel. And then we got into the question, should we talk about the machlokas Chafetz Chaim Ruta Sol Salon doing this? I don't remember. Right, it's a whole separate topic, so we won't introduce it now if we didn't talk about it before. And then we talked about the question of really whether Mechila should be comparable to a monetary Mechila, or is it more of an emotional reality? And some nafkaminas, including if you change your mind afterwards, is it possible to revoke the Mechila? And also the question of, can a cotton be more from the story about the stifler who offended a child and showed up in his bar mitzvah because thought there was a cotton he couldn't be more from, so he waited until he was grown up. Okay. Okay, we're doing pretty well at time, you see. It's like a late start, what can we accomplish? Okay, that's two topics down. We still have a few more minutes left. So, any questions on any of that? Yes, sir.
Well, if you don't know who you offended, you might offend someone. Do I have to have a hush that maybe I offended everyone? Do I send out the mass X?
Well, it becomes meaningless if you don't have any real basis for it. So, in general, you should try not to make racist comments. Or you should try not to say things that are offensive to large groups of people, because then you are talking in trouble. Sorry? Everyone's voted already? I'm just saying. But you know, that's an issue. In general, Hilchos Lashon Hara, it's a problem that speaking Lashon Hara, it's a whole separate discussion, I guess we didn't spend time on this, but getting Mechila for Lashon Hara is tricky. And one of the reasons, a lot of reasons why it's tricky, one of the reasons some Sfarim point out is because you don't necessarily know even who to ask Mechila from. And that happens especially when somebody speaks about a group of people. So we tend to think that it's less bad to speak about a group than it is to speak about an individual. Mostly because if anybody gets offended, then we always feel we can tell them, oh, I was talking about you, you're the one good one, and all the others that we don't like. It doesn't work as well as one might think. But the fact is that the reality is that you are disparaging a whole group of people. And when it comes to Lashon Hara about one person, if we're worried that you don't get the whole picture about this one person, so Kal Vachomer, if you're talking about a group of people, there'll be people who will be affected who you're not even really addressing at all. So it's a problem with Lashon Hara about a group, and yet Mechila is a problem because how do you know who to ask? So you could issue a public declaration, but it's hard to really confirm one by one that you're actually getting any kind of meaning from Mechila. So another reason why this is the kind of avera that probably is best avoided. But yeah, people you think you may have offended, it's kedai to ask if you're just going to do it in a very blanket way. So that's a part of the discussion also, that it's better than nothing probably, but it doesn't really become meaningful if it doesn't actually connect to some specific act. And it's interesting nowadays when people say offensive things in public, and then they have apologies, so the apologies tend to be judged on a very harsh scale by people. And one of the things that is a no-no in these apologies is you're not allowed to say, I apologize to anyone who was offended, because then it makes it sound like, oh, they're crazy for being offended, so you're apologizing to them, but the rest of the world who is normal enough not to get offended, you don't have to worry about that. So that's considered to be an offensive implication. But the truth is that it makes sense, and the fact is people react to different things in different ways. And so you're saying that if I caused you tzar, so I apologize to you, and if I didn't cause you tzar, then you don't need to hear from me. So it's not such a crazy thing to say, but nowadays it's considered a misstep in the apology realm because of its implications. So it's something you gotta finesse a little bit. Okay, any other issues? All right, so I regret that we don't have more time, but let's try to talk quickly about regret. We have 5-6 minutes. Let's see how much we can get into that. So we wanted to talk, I'd say, the very broad outline, see if we can see. Sorry?
It's 2 minutes.
It's fast. Oh, even better. We have 8 minutes. Okay, we could talk about 3 topics. But so we'll just say briefly about the issue of Mechila, of the issue of Charata. So the whole process of tshuva is a little murky. We know that it's something we have to do, but we don't have really instructions on how to do it, which is problematic. So the Sifrei Musar, they give us somewhat of a sense, but it's not a very clear sense. So essentially the question comes up, what is the role of Charata in the Tshuva process? How does that factor in? So we saw that in the Rambam seems to say that charata comes after azivas achet, which is a little hard to understand. And in Rabbeinu Yona, he splits it between whether it's an aveira you do once or an aveira that you do habitually, chronically. And the Meiri has it the other way around, but we would guess that charata is before the act of azivas achet. So we mentioned a few approaches in what charata could be. Yes, sir? I'm sorry? Yeah, that's essentially what they seem to. Now, if you look, part of the nuances here is that the different svarim have different ways of doing tshuva, both in terms of what they suggest and how they count it. So in Rabbeinu Yona, it's about 20 steps in tshuva. So we noted at the time, I think, that about 3 of his 20 seem to be somewhat grouped under the charata heading. Sachet and chetok negdo summit, things like that, are all subgroups within his listing. But for our purposes, it seems like charata and bekabal asid nazim sachet rather should be said as the same thing. So one approach, if you want to say that Kabbalah Asid comes first, is to say that the role of charata is to make sure that Kabbalah Asid actually kicks in. Because, yes, you can say you're not going to do this again, but we need this to be meaningful. So it's not going to be meaningful unless we know that it's going to last. So if you don't have any sense of regret, you don't have any sense of charata, so then it's not likely that it's going to stick. So one purpose of charata is really to strengthen azivas achet, because if you don't have a sense of regret, you're just going to go back to it again tomorrow. And we mentioned in that sense, we can understand the Rambam's line over there, where the Rambam has this apparently very high standard, a very high threshold, that tshuva is when Yair Olav Yodea Talumas, when the one who knows secrets can testify about you, you're not going to go back to the Avera again. So one could ask, that doesn't seem fair. So if you do the whole Avoda Sachuma now, but 20 years from now you have another Nisonian and you trip back into it, so your Chuba now is no good, doesn't seem fair. So presumably what the Rambam means is not the Yodea Talumas means the one who knows the future, but the Yodea Talumas means the one who knows what's inside of you, the one who knows the inner parts, who knows whether you've done this actual work or not. That's where you're going to have the indication of real tshuva. So this reflects the fact that if you want the Kabbalah to be meaningful, it has to be accompanied by something more than just saying, I'm never going to do it again. So that was one possible reason for charata. Second reason for charata is that it is the tool that uproots the past, that you need to have the mechanism of being ochre from afrei. Especially the first view, we're worried about the future. The Rambam's view, we're worried about the future. In the second view, we're worried about the past. If you want tshuva to wipe the slate clean, so then you need charata to be ochre. And you mentioned that the Ruchonin has a statement that even though the general approach is that tshuva is a chesed, it's a gift from the Kadosh Baruch Hu that we can rewrite our past, so it's an expression of chesed, he says, no, it's actually an expression of mishpat, because we find it in the other sense also, that the Gemara says, if somebody lives a righteous life, but then regrets what he did, he's told ha'shonos, so then that undoes it. So if it can undo your good things, then it can also undo your bad things. So charata, therefore, is basic al-pidin, but it's necessary there in order to be okam afreid. And that also is something we find in Hatar Sadar, that we have a concept that a charata can be oker what has happened in the past. So therefore, that could be the role of charata, that it's meant to accomplish that. And then we mentioned a third possibility, that maybe the idea of charata is that the whole process of tshuva is that you're supposed to become a new person, and that you're supposed to fundamentally change. So yesterday, when you did this avera, it didn't make you feel bad because it was consistent with your stature at this time. But today, if you were to think about that avera, it makes you feel regretful because it reflects the fact that this is no longer a part of your personality. So it's an indication of the changed personality, and it's valuable for that. And along those lines, you suggested why maybe the tshuva on Yom Kippur, according to the framing of the Rambam, it sounds like the tshuva on Yom Kippur is just about vidui, it doesn't require the other parts. So we suggested that maybe becoming a part of the tzibur is similar to charata, because just like you're changing on an individual level, means you're now a person who's not comfortable with this avera. So too, now that you have joined the standards of the tzibur, so that's also inconsistent with the tzibur standards, and therefore that also is affected from a tshuva perspective. Just to add, we mentioned about the different categories in Rabbeinu Yonah. So one of the ideas of Rabbeinu Yonah is shehei cheto nevdo zavid, that the avera should be near you all the time, should be in front of you all the time. And that's probably consistent with the first approach that we mentioned, that the point is not to make you miserable, but the point is to make sure you're not going to return to the avera, so you're always aware of how you stumbled in it. And we noted also that when the Rambam talks about busha, so that Rabbeinu Yonah has as another separate one of his 20 steps, but the reference to Rambam and busha is probably also about charata. And in one place when the Rambam talks about having azivas achet before charata, so there are those who explain, and Moshe Sternbach has an essay about this, that if you're going to start off with a focus on regret, maybe that would become overwhelming and you wouldn't be able to move forward because you'd be so weighed down by that. So it's necessary sometimes to first pull yourself out of the situation a little bit, and then you can use the charata to make sure you don't revert to that path. But start with that regret could be debilitating and may stop you from being able to progress. Okay, so even though I came late, we still managed to get three topics in. That's not terrible. So that bodes well for tomorrow, where hopefully we'll have a full show slot, and we have three Kiddushin topics to do, so hopefully we'll do that, but in any event, you'll use Seder to make sure that you know exactly what you would like to have.